Some trusts are based on very specific statutes. We know that, for instance, the first party special needs trust is based on a very specific long statute, that 42 U.S.C. 1396P, D4A, D, and all this, and sometimes C. Okay, very specific statutes. They're not a lot of fun to read. Go try to read them sometime. And you're trying to figure out what exactly do they say. So that's another good reason to get Patty's and Clyde's and Wes's and Molly's book on, it'll explain to you what those things really say when you can't figure out what they really are saying. And so we have the very specific rules. Then you have state law as well as federal law, and an example of state law is your 1301 court-created trust, where an individual doesn't need a full guardianship. They can do quite well if they have a trust. Now, when you go to that statute, in case you think that it's just, well, there's just that statute, the trust that the court can create under 1301 is not necessarily a special needs trust. It's just a trust. It can be just a support type trust. But the statute gives the court the ability to make that trust that the court is creating into a first party special needs trust. So you have to know how the statute works and be able to articulate to the judge exactly what you need for your client in the trust that's being created. We also have reformation of trusts and reformation of wills. We're going to talk more specifically about those a little bit later. Well, when does the trust become effective? Does it become effective during the lifetime of the settlor? Well, many times not. Settlor can set up a trust and fund the trust, and here it goes. But you can also set up a trust that is testamentary, put it in a will, put it in a revocable trust, and that trust in and of itself doesn't even begin until after the death of the settlor. Happens all the time. So you have to understand when the trust becomes effective. Who's the beneficiary of the trust? Well, is it an adult who's perfectly capable of managing money? You're going to set up a trust for the benefit of your child, and you're going to put money in that, and then distributions go out to that child, and they're perfectly capable of managing their own money. Well, that happens. What about if it's a minor? Well, we have kind of a problem there, because then the minor can't manage their own money, so they have to have a trustee. So that trustee has to have rules under which they manage that trust. What if it's a person with limited capacity, they're not able to manage their own assets even as an adult? Well, then you have other issues with regard to trustees. So you have to know who your intended beneficiary is. What about the benefits that are provided to that beneficiary? Are we talking about income? Are we talking about principal? Are we talking about both? What about minerals? Are you giving minerals in fee to this person so they own the mineral interest and the income? Are we just saying that the income from the minerals goes to one person and then after their death, fee goes to somebody else? You have to understand what the benefits are intended to do. What about the termination? Benefits don't always last for the lifetime of the beneficiary. They can terminate at a certain age. They can terminate at a particular event taking place. It's important to achieve the goals by knowing exactly what you want to do. With regard to trustees, they can do only what the trust says. And so you have distribution rules, and we're going to talk about specific distribution rules in special needs trust a little later. But is the trustee's discretion unlimited? Where we say, well, the trustee can do anything. The trustee can do nothing if they choose. Or are we saying that the trustee can only do very specific things and may not be able to do other specific things? For instance, if you have an SSI beneficiary, you don't want the trustee throwing out a bunch of cash, you know, so those $1 bills that we were talking about, or those deposits into that account. They're all kind of cash, whether you think so or not. And if you distribute too much cash to an SSI recipient, what are you going to do? You're going to knock them off benefits. And if they lose benefits, they're going to lose Medicaid. So you have to understand what the limitations of the program are. Perhaps that trust might say there can be distributions to that SSI individual, but they're only going to be a partial reduction, not a loss of the entire benefits of the program. And that's called in-kind support and maintenance, and it reduces the benefits, the cash benefits, by one-third. But it can also allow a tremendous amount of benefit well over and above that one-third reduction if you know how to set it up in the trust, and then the trustee is given the guidance to know how to make those distributions. It can be of a tremendous benefit. You just have to know exactly how to set it up and write that trust correctly.